Hello and welcome to The Big Fight. 10 things you'd like to change about the internet. Well, it could be 5, it could be 20, but that's the way most websites do get your attention, isn't it? Let's face it, the internet is something that is fast, for most of us, becoming one of the major, one of the most dominating aspects and factors in our life. From how we are talking to people, to how we are communicating, to how we are getting our content, to security around us, how the Internet of Things is coming. It's a dominant feature in our lives. But then, there are lots of questions that people have about it, some concerns, whether it's bullying, whether it's security, whether it's privacy, whether there's something ghastly behind all of this which is going to come out and bite us at some point. So let's try and deconstruct all of that. Is there something we should be scared about when it comes to the internet? Are there things that we should change? Are there things that the government should be trying to worry about, or should the government stay out of it completely? We've assembled 6 people with some of the best insights into the internet and how it actually functions to help us understand the net a little better. And let me start off by welcoming Pranesh Prakash, who is Policy Director, the Center for Internet and Society. We have Saket Modi with us, who's an entrepreneurial and an ethical hacker who looks at security. Sometimes we'll be hacking a lot of your transactions to make sure that they're being done correctly. So if you have any questions, send them to... Okay, I'm misinterpreting your job profile, but then...
That's very accurate.
Oh, it is accurate.
It is. Okay.
There you are. So Aparna Vishwanathan is an advocate who's done a lot of work in cyber laws and other things. Abhinandan Sekri, co-founder newslaundry.com, actually loves the internet, but doesn't like it for what it's doing to your life, right? You're spending too much time online.
No, not that much actually. But I love what it's doing.
It's gone down. You keep on cribbing about the fact that it's eating my life.
Do I?
Well, you used to. Only a few months ago that you changed. See, this is what it does. Now it's even eating into your memory span. All right, fine. Rajesh Charya, President of the Internet Service Providers Association. Whether the government should look at this at all or not, I'm sure you have strong views on. And Anna Vetikad, it's always great to have you with us as well. Well-known author. All right, who wants to kick off? Is there something we should try to change about the internet?
Absolutely.
You should change things about it.
Absolutely, 100%. Right now, the way the internet functions privileges freedom of speech over privacy. So we ought to work in ways that the internet can actually protect privacy. We live in a world of oversharing, where it's not the fact that we're sharing so much that's really the problem, but that corporations, that governments across the world actually harvest what we're sharing and make profiles about us. And that's one aspect of the internet that really deserves
okay, so government snooping on you, corporations snooping on you, I get that. But a flip side to that could be, why are you sharing so much? Every time you're looking at the internet and you're seeing people posting pictures of themselves, pictures which should never go out into the public domain, and I'm not just talking about the bad pictures, I'm talking about other pictures. You know, why would you want to be posing in that particular outfit and saying, am I looking fine? Why would you want to do something like that? But you shared that, and because you shared that, why are you blaming other people from picking on it? I guess that's one view of one of the ways of looking at it.
That would be perfectly fine. If there was an expectation that what I'm sharing is not actually sharing to us, you know, a limited set of people who are following me or a limited set of people who I'm targeting. Now, most people, while they're sharing, they're thinking they're having that kind of a, you know, conversation. So, say if you're at a bar, well, the conversation is open for anyone to hear, but you don't have the expectation that everyone is actually listening in and overhearing what you're saying.
Okay.
And that causes the problem.
Okay, Barapan, before I come to you, potentially could some of that data that you're sharing, thinking only my friends are going to see it, or only my, well, Twitter followers, you should be expecting anybody in the world really to see it. But on Facebook, for example, you're sharing something, you think only my friends are going to be seeing this, and before you know it, it's been disseminated to a much wider audience which you weren't thinking of, and there are no real laws to prevent that from happening.
The notoriously complex nature of a lot of these confidentiality agreements are what you're required to read, and therefore people by and large just click on I agree without going into detail. So that can be considered from a legal point of view, look, this is an onerous contract, it's one-sided, and therefore it could be voidable. Though, I mean, I'm sure that people who have drafted it have taken a lot of protections to avoid that. But yes, that is one argument. But I think
just on that point, you think some of these agreements should be read carefully. This license continues even if you stop using our services. Stuff like that.
Whose agreement is that?
If we can, I'm not going to name the corporations, go and look at all of them. We are constantly changing and improving our services. We may suspend and stop a service altogether. There can be changes made in this, and you have to come back and log on and see this. You should look at the terms regularly. We'll post notice of modifications to these terms on this page. That page could change completely. It could say, we're going to sell your entire, all this data that you're putting on us. But if you haven't logged on to that page and read it again, it could go.
Yeah, I mean, it's one-sided and complicated to begin with. Presumably, they can also unilaterally change it. But what's even more worrying, it's not just what I may post online or what I have agreed to, but it's also every time you use the internet to search anything. I mean, you could be looking, I mean, what is the greatest thing about the internet is you have the quest for knowledge. You search the internet for any particular topic you want to read about, or you send an email. You are still being tracked through those acts. So I don't need to post my picture online in order to be tracked on the internet. That is what is what I'm.
So you are being tracked. You're saying
definitely everybody's being tracked on the internet.
If you don't want to be, there are options available that you won't be. So you can have a plugin on your browser, and you will not be tracked. So that option exists. So I don't see why the internet is to blame or should change.
Okay, as he says, open everything in an incognito, window, and you're good to go. There's no issue. Or is there?
Okay, just for starters, incognito doesn't stop tracking. That is just to allow you an easier access to porn, or basically deletes your cookies. Yeah, that's how it's used most widely. There was a survey recently. This reminds me, this topic that we are talking about, privacy on the internet, and the thing that you read out. This reminds me of this very popular saying. It says that at a time when you step out of your house, if you cannot clean the entire world, you put on your shoes, right? Ideally, the world should have been clean. You don't need shoes to go out, right? It should be, completely sparkling white. But the problem is it is not feasibly possible or to have everything clean. So you make sure that you're taking precautions in order to make sure that even if there is dust on the ground, it doesn't stick to your soul. Similarly, on the internet, now it is so vast. You're talking about what? Like 3 billion people on the internet. You're talking about 100 billion emails every day. So that's like a lot of information being, transferred on the internet. So instead of going out and reading the documents, me as an end user, because of course I use the internet, all of us do, I would rather focus on me doing anything on the internet, assuming that I'm being watched. Even if I'm on a Tor browser, which is relatively a better or a safer way to be, because it bounces your IP addresses between multiple servers, and it's relatively more difficult to track you. I say relatively, not impossible to track you, but coming back, it is still me assuming that everything is hacked and I'm being monitored on the internet is the safest
really,
way of being.
You see, that's not okay. How can I just start coming to the audience in this? How many of you are on the internet assuming that you're being watched? Whoa.
Everyone.
My God. Now I know. This is obviously, there are generational differences out here.
How many people use the Tor browser?
Okay, all of you, come and meet me after this to tell me why you're using it. This is also going out on the internet. Now you know them. You have the addresses, their phone numbers. Go catch them, interrogate them. All right, I'm kidding. You're not using Tor browsers?
Well, I don't, but I'm aware of them. So if someone...
Correct answer to that would have been, but Vikram, I do nothing that I do.
I was waiting for you to say that.
I'm only publishing extracts of the Bhagavad Gita, which is perfectly fine.
Because I'm only going to places where, you enrich your life and Sri Sri Ravi Shankar teaches.
Yeah, I know. You come to the NDTV.com site very often.
Yeah.
Are you worried about, and tell us, the president of the Internet Service Providers Association, are the Internet Service Providers, for starters, spying on all of us? Are there records somewhere there?
First of all,
giant banks of data exactly where that particular gentleman, what he was surfing yesterday, and so on and so forth.
No. Yes. First of all,
he's going to come back and buy your
service. First of all, the service providers are not doing any banking of the data of any personal or any sort of thing. But one thing, what we are discussing about the privacy, when we are into the public internet, when we are sending ourselves to the public, then how far we are concerned about the privacy? Because all around us, the public is there.
Yes. Yes and no. There are times, yes, as I said, if you're posting something on Twitter, you should assume people are watching it. You could be sending a direct message to somebody. You could be having a direct email communication with somebody. You're not necessarily expecting that to be hacked and put out into public
Vikram,
domain.
It's not about the hacking. I'm sending a mail to you. I'm sending a picture to you. How I can guarantee that you are not forwarding this to your friend group?
That's correct.
Then but automatically I am being public.
If I'm posting a picture, it's partly an issue. If you're
sending a mail to somebody, should you assume that mail could be forwarded to 30 people?
Well, you never know what the recipient is going to do with the mail, but that happens even often. It happens in the real world. You send a letter to someone, they can go and publish it tomorrow. But that's not what's interesting about the internet.
The point is the internet, all of this is logged. So now I'm kind of unclear what Rajesh is saying, that ISPs don't maintain these logs because the law requires, the ISP license that they're under requires.
That's the IPDR. We are maintaining the IP records. We are not maintaining the sites content. Where you are going.
So the IP
we are not going for the deep packet inspection of the content. We are just recording that you have logged in. This was your IP address, and from this time to this time you have logged in. That's all. Further, we are not.
You're not saying which sites a person went
no.
to. So if the security people come to you and say, was this person on whatever, a jihadi website?
It will be, because what will happen, this will come from the content. The content site owner will say that this IP address has watched us or this IP address has accessed our website. Then we will be saying that this IP address was being used by you.
We know that in India, ISPs block websites, right? How could they block specific websites if they don't know what websites you're visiting? So they obviously
we are blocking it from the DNS and we are blocking it from the proper
but
DNS.
But he's saying he can't tell that X person or he can't tell that X person or Y person actually went onto a particular website.
That's we are not policing anything.
Anna, let me get you in, and then I'm going to come back to what role the government should be playing in all of this, if any.
Because I want to address the issue of privacy. I think that there is a great need to educate people who are using the internet. This might sound boring, but I think we need to be having discussions in schools and colleges, because this is, when you're on the internet, it is not a private conversation. You said just now that if I send a Twitter DM, then you might have a reasonable expectation of privacy. But if you tweet something out to your followers, you cannot be expecting that that's private. But we have instances, and I remember a conversation Amitabh Bachchan was having with a journalist, which later got quoted by the press, and he said, but I was having a private one-on-one conversation with the journalist, but it was on his public timeline. And you get to realize then that there are many people who do not realize what they are getting into. Now, what is the definition of privacy? If you send an email to your mother or your sister, there is an expectation of privacy. But if
or
you
an SMS,
put out,
which is, again, you may
yes, yeah. But if you put out a naked photograph of your baby on Facebook and you have 1,000 quote-unquote friends, how can you have a reasonable expectation of privacy? So one thing the internet makes you realize is, sorry to be undiplomatic, but there are a lot of foolish people out there. And therefore, we need to educate people to understand that you cannot be assuming that something that you have put out in a public space has then to be treated as private matter by people who are strangers to you.
So let's just stick for a moment to foolish behavior on the internet, right? And then we'll come to somebody actually getting nasty about it. Is there a lot of foolish behavior on the internet?
There's a lot of foolish behavior.
Top three foolish things that you see.
Thanks to Donald Trump, we can say there's a lot of foolish behavior in the world right now. So that, but coming back to the debate.
States, and it frightens me every time I say that.
I can be straightforward. So the point, I want to just add to what she just said, and that is so right. And I'll add that to the context of the debate that both of you were having in terms of the ISP storing or not storing the logs. The awareness generally is so low. Out of the audience out here who's watching the show or seeing the thing, how many of you guys have actually been formally educated how to use the internet? 3, 4, 5 right? So okay. 5 out of maybe 50 or 60 people sitting here. So that is the, and believe me, this is
but
the younger generation.
But formal education. This particular audience all said that we are
that's exactly
conscious
my point
of the fact that we could be being monitored.
So this is a younger generation.
They need probably more, sorry, I'm not being condescending, but because they've been born into an internet world, they need more education possibly than the older lot.
You may need education on things like, all right, let's use Tor browser and all that security, but let's first finish with the level one,
that's
which is
point.
Just people doing foolish stuff. And by the way, 80% of the things that are going wrong are happening because of people just doing things that are dumb. They're putting out stuff which they shouldn't be. They, you know, they have their passwords that are easy to read.
The basics
you have
are
a
not
bank
in place,
account
basically.
Where your password is something which is obviously easy to read. Now, sometimes the banks and others step in to try and prevent that behavior.
Sure.
But people do it themselves.
So, you know, generally the term that generally, you know, people like using is cyber hygiene, that, you know, the minimum basics that you would know, like, school is supposed to be that place where you go and learn the basics of life. Unfortunately, today, internet is banned or mobile phones are banned in schools and colleges. Now, of course, Rajesh sir clearly said that the service providers are not storing the logs of the websites. In general, the people who will be watching this will take this for, okay, we are safe because our logs are not being stored. However, let me tell you the stakeholders in between when you type a Facebook.com or a Twitter.com and you press an enter. The moment you press an enter on your laptop, the first thing that happens, it gets recorded on your laptop itself. It goes and queries a local file, which is a host file. It gets the IP. If it doesn't find that, it goes to the DNS server, which he mentioned. It gets the IP address of Facebook. Then it goes to Facebook. All this is happening via ISP and different routers, which definitely store the logs of the destination IP and the originating IP. Then on Facebook, again, your logs are stored. And then it comes back with whatever HTTP request you had. And again, you're seeing it on your mobile or your desktop. So there are so many different levels at which the things can be stored, monitored, and okay. used for different purposes.
And let me add, are required to be stored by the law under the ISP license. So it's not as though it's up to the ISPs alone. So it's not as though they are maliciously trying to gather information about all that you're doing.
Okay.
They're required.
And then foolish behavior first.
I just want to take one step back and redefine what is foolish behavior. I think we are underestimating what the internet is. The internet is bigger. It is life itself. It is altering everything.
It's not life itself.
Hear me out. Hear me out.
It will be.
I mean, you can't survive on an island on the South Pacific without the internet.
You cannot.
Most people actually.
You cannot run a business.
Yeah, you cannot run a business
unless you have a your Swachh Bharat says, which whatever it is, you have to file online your service tax. One sec, I'll just come to that. What I'm saying is, we are still underestimating the internet, and this is a Buddha generation.
I
the internet, what you and I...
I strongly object you are gesturing to me to say our Buddha.
What?
Can I ask for a Facebook poll whether I should sue him for that?
What we call...
Tweet me, tell me if I should sue him.
What we call foolish behavior is what my grandmother would call foolish behavior. Nachda pherda hai partiyan che. But ab ye nachde pherda hai Facebook
che. Nachda pherda hai aur Facebook pe dalta hai.
The thing is, that's fine. A, what is foolish is going to change.
Okay,
what is acceptable is going to change.
Okay, audience, let me come to you. Do you see a lot of examples of foolish behavior? And don't tell say that I did it. Say my friend did it. But what are the most foolish thing you've seen on the internet so far?
Posting obscene videos, or photos.
Okay, that's foolish is also big business.
Okay, so you get 10 points from your mother for that.
Yeah, I know. She's watching this. We're posting this on the internet.
Posting a selfie with a dead body.
Saying, oh, dear.
That's rather foolish, yes.
Posting a pic with your dog.
What's wrong with that?
No, you are posting an inappropriate pic. Like a pic with your dog.
That comes back to his naked. That comes back to the naked part of it, not the dog part of it. I was just saying, I posted pictures of my dog. There's nothing wrong with it.
Maintaining fake accounts.
Why is that foolish?
Because you are not pretending. You are not showing your reality. You are not. You are pretending someone being someone else.
Yeah, but if you're somebody with a fake account on Twitter, you may well be making a lot of money.
Complete that, Vikram. What I'm saying is, so it's going to alter everything.
Okay.
So the reference points that we are using are real life, and then there's virtual life.
Okay.
Virtual life will make its own
actually,
rules.
Can I just, I'll come back to the audience later again, but another quick snap poll, we're doing lots of them today. How many of you agree with Abhinandan? The internet now is life itself.
Oh boy.
Whoa.
See,
look
I'm
at
still
the
young
number
at
of hands
uncle, I'm still young at heart.
No, or foolish. Or foolish.
But can I,
as the case
just
might
give
be.
Vikram
but some people out here didn't think it was life itself. Why don't you think the internet is life itself?
You are only responsible for your activities, and it is all upon you whether you want to decide you are addicted to it or not addicted to it.
Yeah.
Because in some
so it's not just a question, Jenny. If you are sensible and sane, then you are not necessarily
exactly.
treating it as life itself.
Yeah.
See. That's wisdom for you, not foolish behavior.
But can I just give a very basic example that goes beyond the privacy issue also? When I talked about education, I also think that people need to understand there are a lot of young people who think internet pe hai, so it must be right, all right? The fact is, okay, you Google something and you can get 10 bits of correct information and 55 bits of wrong information. There are kids in classrooms who are saying, but it was on Wikipedia. Also, it's and because I teach journalism, I find myself having to increasingly tell my students this. If somebody is putting footage of an event on their official page where you know that they're going to give you quality footage, why are you just randomly going to YouTube? The thing is, people do the easy things. They'll Google something, they'll go to Wikipedia, they'll go to YouTube. They have to also be educated about the fact that just because it's out there doesn't mean it's correct.
The amount of false and fake information that is circulating, as Anna says, is really high, and it's a cause for serious concern. And actually, you know, sometimes you don't quite know what to do about it. I've seen my friends have sometimes forwarded me a WhatsApp message about a list of prominent media people and what we are accused or theoretically accused of having done. And none of it is, well, most of it is absolutely not true at all. And you keep wondering, then what do you do? Should you start responding to this and saying, but this is a lie, this is not true at all? If you do that, then now you're attracting attention to it. If you don't say that this is a lie, then before you know it, people are believing that it's 100% the truth. He hasn't even denied it. Then what do you do?
So one thing you definitely shouldn't do as the government when rumors are spreading and say are leading to violence is to ban the internet. And that's what we've seen more than 24 times over the last...
But we've seen that fake information leading to violence. It happens.
Absolutely.
Happens in Kashmir, it happens in state after state. So what do you do then?
What you do is, for instance, in 2013 August, when there was an exodus of people from the northeast from Bangalore. At that time, what the Canadian government did, because there were some interns at CIS who received an SMS from the government saying, don't believe any of the rumors that you're hearing. There aren't any planned attacks that are happening on persons from the northeast. Please don't spread these rumors any further. And there are laws that actually, can be used to...
So spread the right thing is what the government should do in a situation like this.
Yes.
Don't ban the internet. Instead, direct it in a certain manner and get your own message out.
No, but there is actually a legal remedy in that circumstance, for once. I mean, under Section 79, you do have a takedown procedure. So if you do have a post which is leading to violence, I mean, there is a legal remedy. I mean, you don't have to take resource to criminal law.
But, you know, it's very difficult to find. So, you know, okay, one is the government doing it, right? What does the government do it? But even for a particular individual, let's say, and I'm coming back to the example, let's say somebody has been circulating a WhatsApp message saying XYZ is accused of whatever. And it's not true. It's absolutely not true. There's nothing truthful about it. What does an individual do?
Well, the individual, unfortunately, under Section 79 doesn't have any remedy because the entire IT Act and the government will issue a notice to the ISP and the ISP will have to follow the takedown procedure.
But how does the ISP find
ISP doesn't have any issue because ISP is not hosting the content. ISP is just an highway. We are giving you the access
liable
to the website.
Right.
But what is the right now discussion that if you are sending a false message and the rumor is spread, the person's personality has got damaged. The legal action will take later on.
Yeah.
But by
so
that time, it will not be recovered.
Okay, supposing I was to right now, after this particular debate is over, start circulating a WhatsApp message saying that Abhinandan is taking over as the campaign manager for Donald Trump. What can he do?
Well, you have the remedies that you have in the regular world.
Which is?
You have criminal and civil defamation.
No, circulate very fast.
Two parts of this. Why just individuals?
That's a punishment for calling him uncle.
See, the thing is, the internet, if I could, you know, draw a comparison, a bit like the telephone or the printing press. Now, because someone is using the printing press to print nonsense, doesn't mean there's something wrong with the printing press. There are enough, you have to have faith. You know, like Bapu had said, Satya ki hamesha jeet hoti hai, uncle. So that's what Bapu said. You make me Donald Trump.
Uncle. He's targeting you.
One more uncle reference.
No,
can we just pause this? I have a WhatsApp message to send.
But Vikram, seriously, the thing is that rumors have always existed. Okay, they've existed before the internet came about, whether it was in print, whether it was people, you know, carrying out some sort of campaign.
Yeah, but
the
internet can spread much faster,
exactly,
much further.
Which is why...
much wider...
So can the correction to it.
Exactly.
We have to have...
So then you're down to issuing... No, so okay, now I'm asking on a question of strategy. Is it a sensible idea to be publishing clarifications every time there's a wrong rumor?
I think you should publish clarifications, but I might find myself in a minority on this panel because I'm just playing the devil's advocate here. If you can have curfew in riot situations, why are you saying that if you don't transpose the real world onto the web, the World Wide Web, why are you saying that you shouldn't even for a day or two stop internet services?
Because the internet, as Abhinandan put it, is life itself. It's not just passage through certain parts of town that you're curbing when you're actually cutting the internet.
That could be life itself also. No, you're in a curfew, you're not where you have a medical
But you don't get food.
You can lock somebody into their house, but you can't deprive them of the internet.
The very reason why internet is so powerful.
I'm just being devil's advocate. Like, I'm not saying you should do it. I'm being devil's advocate here.
I'm happy to take that on. During a curfew, you're not prevented from, say, calling an ambulance. During a curfew, you aren't prevented from communicating with people. During a curfew, you are not prevented from all the kinds of things that
happen. You could phone somebody, but not step out. And the ambulance has a special authorization. I'm playing the devil's advocate here. I confess I'm not 100%
sure. That's against the DNA
of
internet. The reason why internet is so powerful is because it's free, it's open to all, it doesn't care how much money you have in your bank.
So is democracy. But even in democratic countries, you occasionally have curfew.
What she's talking about is the deliberate misuse of the internet to spread falsehood. Now what happens?
Now most people take Wikipedia as a Britannica encyclopedia, which are very, very different. I have a Wikipedia page, and believe me, I can go and write anything about me out there, and there is no problems at all. And I can write I'm the Prime Minister of India, and it would be there for at least 2 days till the time somebody
true. Wikipedia actually.
So
Wikipedia actually is correct a surprising amount of time.
It is correct, which is why when it is not correct, it is dangerous.
But the real problem is not so much at Wikipedia, but in other forums, whether it's Twitter or WhatsApp, where today you will see on an average day the amount of falsehood that is being almost deliberately circulated.
But it's not a critical mass enough to impact your life. That's what I'm saying. I think we react to it.
I'll ask you a basic question, Vikram. How many times have you done a story?
Extend it further. I'm going to come to the. I'll extend it further. It's not a question of what is enough to affect your life. Now, okay, whatever happens in a specific narrow circle like a Facebook post about one person, a child in school, a 15-year-old, a rumor spread saying this person did X, Y, Z with Y person 2 days ago.
Right.
How many cases have we seen in the world where that has led to trauma, has led to depression, has led to suicide?
That's what I'm saying. That's not the internet. Like I said, when it's life itself.
No, that's collateral damage. Let's understand that.
There
was a girl who committed suicide because she apparently did or didn't shoplifted. She was in a hostel. You may have read the newspaper. And because her classmates said that, and they all used to go to the same shop, and they said your flatmate shoplifted. And she jumped off, and, you know, a young engineering college girl. We are expecting, like he said, the internet to be some new sanitized tool. It is not. It is a reflection of your life online. So if people are upset by, in the US, there was this young student who was filmed by his, batchmates having gay sex. And because he wasn't out of the closet yet, he was traumatized, he jumped. It had nothing to do with the internet. We cannot make the world.
Can be spread. I mean, we had this. Yeah. There's another horrific case of this lady who was live streaming one of her friend's rapes.
Yes.
You know, and that on Periscope, would you believe it? Now, of course, you can argue about what all happens, but I think the point I'm trying to make is that these can spread to a larger number of people and have a major impact on life. What should be done about it? Audience, have you seen a lot of examples of this falsehoods being spread and that having a seriously damaging impact?
But it is important to understand that why are we making the internet such a big part of our life that it affects our decisions as well as our decision making as well as our life to a great extent.
Would it affect your life in a major way if your friends, somebody was spreading among your friends on Facebook some falsehood about it?
Absolutely not. Because it would not affect my decision making. I should know for a fact that it's wrong.
He's particularly mature. Next.
I think the more recent example would be the Muzaffarnagar riots. I think what happened we saw, I think that's a false, notion that was being spread out in the circle and domain. I think a lot needs to be learned from that in particular rather than, showing off your personal things.
Okay, fine.
I think the internet should be a controlled medium from the government side. How much and what level of intrusion of your privacy is allowed is something that's debatable.
Okay.
But again, what's going outside with ISIS recruiting people online and stuff, I think it's a moral and a government responsibility to snoop till what level is something that we all need to.
Okay, I'm just going to throw that at somebody else. Get one more view, yeah.
So, we consider the recent JNU case, we don't know the videos that were, shown to the social media were actually true or not.
Because we know they were not true.
Some
evidence by now.
Like what I have heard from a person who was actually a student of JNU, what the person told me that the slogans which were spoken there were not all of them true. Half of them were fabricated and
they
like
were. I'm saying that, but that
and luckily
told
him. Spread by
and
television.
See, someone told him physically told him, and not yeah. WhatsApp.
And okay, those were spread by television. Television. The falsity.
Vikram, how many times has NDTV done a story based on a rumor you got on WhatsApp? Never, because your level of awareness is very high.
But others
right?
have. But
I
tried to tell you.
I was about to jump up and start
what
you
talking about?
You're right. We haven't, but it's not that it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I just want to address the Muzaffarnagar riots issue. Now, in all these cases, where is the violence really happening? It's not happening on WhatsApp. People aren't getting hurt on WhatsApp. The violence is happening on the ground. So the curfew...
No, but it's being spread by social media messages.
So when a curfew is put, why is that put? To prevent spreading of rumors? No, to prevent violence from happening.
Exactly.
To prevent people from harming each other, hurting each other, to going and killing each other. That's why curfews are put. Not to prevent people from spreading rumors. So
no,
we
but
can't
it can increase... It can... It can aggravate a situation. You have a very real danger of getting into ideological echo chambers.
Yes.
Where you're hearing a particular point of view, you're not hearing other points of view, and increasingly extreme points of view are resonating because all the people whom you're talking to are saying the same sort of stuff. And therefore, things that may be unacceptable, maybe 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, suddenly become mainstream. And your friend Donald Trump is perhaps tapping into precisely some of that.
So just to add to what you're saying, see, that's where deep learning, artificial intelligence and big data comes in.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is a tremendous amount of power that Facebook is sitting on that we need to understand, and even Google for that matter, because it's not just Facebook, it's WhatsApp, it's Instagram, and with all the data that it has, it can only be publishing posts. Just imagine this, if I open my newsfeed and I find only the posts which support Donald Trump, it's very natural for me to think, am I wrong? Because all the guys are talking good about Donald Trump.
To some extent, is it almost automatically happening because your friends whom you're friending are presumably people who are like-minded. You're maybe following people on Twitter who are like-minded. And you're being exposed to an increasingly extreme views that you would not hear expounded that often are now becoming almost mainstream. In fact, they sometimes tend to be the views that are trending.
Well, you know, I think that the reason why the internet is both beautiful and ugly is that you see so much of human nature coming out, things that people would never say to you to your face at a party or in your home, they will say to you online, and it isn't just strangers, people who you know, who might be colleagues or acquaintances, who will say rude things to you online, communal, misogynistic, all of that, but they won't say that to you, you know, when they meet face to face. So you're, in a sense, people are revealing themselves, which I think is a great thing, because then you know who you want to keep out of your life and who not, but you do know that that opinion exists. And I confess, Vikram, that until I joined, I started various social media accounts, I don't think I realized how communal we are as a country. So I think for me, that's been a huge education, because earlier it was like, you know, okay, maybe people who go to that person's rallies are probably communal, but they won't tell me this. But now I see all of them around me. So I think that's been a huge education. But we have to constantly remind ourselves of this also, which is that human nature is that if I give you one compliment and 10 people compliment you and one person says you're a horrible human being, you'll dwell on that one person saying you're a horrible human being. I still think there is more goodness out there, there is more positivity, and there is more to be gained in terms of networking, in terms of information, and in terms of ideas exchange.
To control the negatives then, is it something that can be controlled, and should either the government be stepping inside, worrying about it, or, you know, the role that corporations are going to be playing, should they be trying to do something about it?
I mean, of course, what the government does is an issue, but I think to go back to the earlier comments, it is, what we're going back to the issue also of privacy. We're not talking about someone making a foolish post or posting their photographs. We're talking about using the internet to search anything or to send an email. All that is getting tracked, and I don't see cookies popping up every minute if I search for a recipe or I search where to stay in such and such place I'm visiting, which are absolutely legitimate ways of using the internet. I'm constantly being tracked. And that is the real concern of the internet today.
So do you like want? Would you like the government to regulate this or no?
Well, they cannot, because the technology has gone to such a level that's
okay.
They don't have it anyway. They don't have the servers.
The government should not regulate. The internet should be free.
all the internet corporations users deciding to take have power over you, which should not be there now.
Then Vikram, what will happen if you will be putting the control? Then what will happen? It will be getting misused. Other government will misuse. This government will misuse. Yeah, some new government will misuse. If you will start talking of the control, then the control will be there. We have already seen about the porn sites that all of the sudden 857 sites has to be blocked. This was the foolish order. Another thing this has come that the ISP has to
increase porn viewership. Or no,
no, no, no.
You should see the another smiles thing. Behind you. They're like,
ISP has to ensure that none of the site which they are opening should contain the child pornography. So this is a very vague type of order. The control should be into the public or who are using the internet.
But how does that happen? How do you? It's easy to say, look, we should self-regulate. But if somebody is putting child pornography on the internet, now that's ghastly.
Right. It's illegal.
But Vikram,
somebody is using the internet to recruit ISIS. Can these be controlled, or is it not possible?
Internet is the most secured communication media right now. What I have told.
He's about to smile.
No. Why I'm saying that if you are uploading anything, your IP address, your MAC address is being caught and recorded.
Okay. As far as this is concerned, I think ISIS recruitment happens offline, it happens online. Pornography happens offline, it happens online. On online, chance of the person being tracked down are higher. So it is better in that sense. So I think government shouldn't regulate, but when it comes to net neutrality, definitely
there
should.
That's why I'm saying.
The one thing that I want to talk about is, people are talking about that. Even you said that, rumors spread faster, it gets communalized, you can have those kind of ideologies that spread faster. Hitler didn't have internet, not at Pol Pot, right? Not at Mussolini. None of them had internet, and they were way more effective. What I'm saying is that the internet, the world was horrible. We've just got used to living in it. The internet makes it better. When you say rumors can go around, I mean, I don't know, whether it's politically okay to say this, but when Indira Gandhi died in 84, I was in class 5. All I saw was this magnificent lady who'd given her life for the country, and people outside, and everything was peaceful and Vivid Bharati music order was playing. What was happening in Delhi was horrible. Is that possible today? Are we saying the world without internet, there were no rumors going around? Rumors were institutionalized. It was ridiculous.
You can sometimes counter it more effectively by messages
coming.
It
is making the world way better after language. It is the greatest single invention. I'd just like to point out one thing. You're a news professional. You should read this book called Amusing Ourselves to Death by Neil Postman. I've quoted it on your show once before. In 85 it was written. It was this cult book which said that TV and TV news is the stupidest thing. It is going to make the world horrible. And, overall, it has made the world better. So I think it's better. He was wrong. He was totally wrong. He was paranoid.
All right.
I'll give you I'll tell you what he's saying makes total sense. Yeah. And just to add to what he's saying, let's clearly demarcate between the medium and the message. Now, thanks to the internet, that's a short circuit of the, we were coming from a time where one time it was the medium is the message. It still is true for some extent, but today, because of the voice that anybody and everybody has, thanks to one tweet that you can send to a Suresh Prabhu or a Sushma Swaraj, even at the worst of the situations that you're in, you can come out from that, and that was not even imaginable a decade back. When you had to have a big PR agency to contact a big journalist and get a story published versus today where you can just go to Facebook, have an account and just post something and it'll already, it'll just catch on if it has some kind of a substance. So I'm just trying to say that, the pros and the cons are both there. It's for us to see.
So far, the history of mass speech, mass media has been an edited one. You have to go through the press, you have to go through electronic media like television or radio, and it's always been edited. But now that is no longer there. That editorial role is no longer there necessarily when it comes to social media.
Which is not always a good thing.
And that scares, which is not always a good thing.
Which is sometimes good, but sometimes very bad.
Absolutely.
Which is where you've got to know what your
speech is about.
No, but that's where you've got to know what your authentic source is. That's where education comes into play.
But that, I think, is answered to some extent by the fact that on the internet, you would know that, here is stuff that is coming. It may or may not be correct, may or may not be true. And here are the certain sources that are likely to be correct and likely to be true because they are well-known media organization who presumably done their diligence.
It's just like point out
you have to be wise enough.
Not everybody actually is as responsible in their consumption of the internet as they should be. That's all I'm saying. Of course, I agree with the pros of the internet. I'm saying that editorial is not a bad word. Editorial also means there's quality control.
Absolutely, absolutely. But freedom of the press can't be restricted to those who can afford to own a printing press. Those who were, say, frontline readers. Used to be, you know, associating with people of some of certain types, used to get ideas communicated to them of certain types. Those who are, say, organizer readers would get a different set of ideas. People self-select with or without the internet. Okay. What the internet, as Anna pointed out, does many times is actually give us an insight into other ideas and new ideas which we might not come across.
One of the things we haven't touched on yet, and perhaps I just want to come to you on that, is what we haven't really discussed right now is actual criminality that perhaps many of us should be more concerned about than we are, which is people actually using the internet to hack into bank accounts, to, you know, forge stuff, to get passwords. Is this something that you think is only going to be on the rise?
Well, let me just comment on that. I mean, if you're looking at, in terms of spam, what we've seen from 2004 onwards, I think the argument can be made that that has significantly decreased because of the companies like Google and other search engines. I mean, there's been a change in technology. You can see that with all the filtering that goes on in the messages that you get, the, you know, right to block someone, the right to be removed from a list. So I think technology has already changed the situation today than what it was 10 years ago.
So when you talk about security and will this go up or will this come down, or the hacking will go up or go down? I feel it's like the shadow of, you know, the taller the height of the person is, the larger the shadow is. Because let's understand fundamentally what hacking is. Generally, people have this perception that, you know, there's a guy in a dark room and you give him a username, he'll give you a password. It's way cooler than that. So I'll explain you what that means. Fundamentally, hacking is simply making something do what it's not supposed to do. That is the definition of hacking, right? You see all the life hacking videos. So you go to a website and you write some queries, and instead of getting your own account, you get to see somebody else's account. So you're making the website do something which it's not supposed to do. Now, is that one way of looking at that? Is I can do that just to extract money from that account and become rich or do something wrong with that. The other side of looking at it is what I do for a living, is look at those vulnerability, look at that as a science problem, a mathematics problem, and tell the guy who made that website and that system that, look, these are these 5 or 10 loopholes and you can go ahead and plug
but
that.
But presumably that guy has asked you to do it. If not, then you're doing something wrong.
Right, so people should come to me more often is what you're trying to say.
You hack into my account, I'm coming to her for legal advice.
Yeah, you got the entire panel here. Yeah, it can all be helped to you. But that's my point, right? So the moment you have a lot of people, the basic problem which happens in the entire thing, as you already pointed out. Yeah. Now, assume a normal SME today, because India has such a huge middle class, they're all coming on the internet, 200 million smartphones. Now, the moment you make a website of your own, the only question that you ask to your son or somebody who you know has a website is, do you have a guy who can make me a website? The question is not even about the security of the website, or can people intrude into
the
website.
Security needs a lot more attention. Okay, fine. Yeah. I'm almost done. I'm going to come back to the audience with one last very quick snap poll. If you had to choose the importance of many things in your life, right, how many of you think that the internet today is more important to you than print and television? How many of you feel that the internet is more important to you than print and television?
Yeah. But as, you know, no. Victor, as far as criminality is concerned, the criminality we're discussing is not what I'm worried about. The criminality that we have to watch out for, and the internet is great as it is one, to make sure it remains, net neutrality remains an absolute. Yeah. And
that's important.
That's why government is important. And the second, I'm waiting for the big antitrust, you know, case coming up, like in 1948, Paramount Pictures and the US government had one where, you know, right from the studios down to the theaters, the pipeline was owned by just these big studios. So there was no chance for independent cinema to come up. Paramount lost the case. The studios in Hollywood collapsed, right? Microsoft versus the US government, 1998. That is the criminality.
that I am worried about.
So you're saying that there is going to be action against the big corporations at certain amount of time.
All right, fine.
Final quick word from you. Internet 5 years from now, far more dominant than it is today or less?
I think that people are going to understand that there is a need for a mix in your life. For instance, you were talking about those terms and conditions, and someday, you know, someone can change a term and or condition, and you have to go back to that page to know that it's been changed. Whereas if you give me something in a printed publication, then you can't change that, and I have much more concrete information which I have to investigate less to prove you said it. So in my life, there's a mixture of both, and I think will always be.
Internet has to be very important for your daily life, and it has to be the part of your daily life.
Okay. It's more or less dominant in 5 years.
Oh man, it's going to change the world. We haven't even seen the half of it yet.
I totally agree.
It's already transforming lives. We're going to be speaking to robots, not only to order cabs, but to order anything. It's all communication is going to be one-to-one with these, you know, type of bots. That's already happening.
Think of the day when you actually have robots instead of guests here on the big five.
Maybe you already have.
Or a robot as the anchor. That also is a possibility.
Without a doubt, just one line, which I really like what Dominic Barton, the global CEO of McKinsey, says, that, you know, the next 20 years, because of the nexus of forces, are going to define the next 200 years. So we're living in very exciting times.
Okay.
Far more dominant. We're seeing algorithmic decision making, big data. We're seeing Internet of Things, etc. So it's going to be pervasive. What I'm most afraid about is controlled by corporations. The World Wide Web, when it originated, was a read-write medium. Now it's mostly, for the large part, a read medium, with the write parts being controlled by corporations. When we want to write, we go through a company rather than having our own website or our own blog or our own microblog or whatever. And that is the most dangerous trend.
And the last piece of advice for the hacker: never trust a McKinsey report with or without the internet.
On that particular note, we have to end this episode of The Big Fight. Thanks so much for watching. We'll be back next week.